This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air, Linda Cohen along with you. Human papillomavirus, or HPV, is the most common sexually transmitted disease in the world. Almost 80% of the world's population is exposed to it by the age of 50. And while it can cause several different kinds of cancer, there is no known cure. Well, joining us with more on this is Heather Shannon, the director of Upstate Midwifery and Gynecology at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you, Linda.
Thanks for coming in. So HPV, the human papillomavirus, is quite prevalent worldwide as well as in this country and can cause cancer. Well, tell us about it. What kinds of cancer can it cause?
Well, the biggest cancer concern is cervical cancer. HPV is known to cause 99.7% of all cervical cancers that women may experience or have. Besides cervical cancer, there is a great uptick in oral throat cancer, tongue cancer, and that is anywhere from 12% for the throat cancer and up, because we're starting to notice those numbers are starting to creep up. Also, there's anal cancer as well as vulvar and penile cancers. And it's about 40% of all penile cancers that are caused by HPV and 90% of all anal cancers.
Wow. So that really does affect, I guess it affects the genital area and anal area, cervical area, oropharyngeal. It's really widespread in that sense. Well, how common is it? I mean, I read somewhere that 79 million Americans are currently infected. And it says that it's so common that nearly all sexually active men and women will have at least one type of HPV at some point in their lives. But what is there more than one type of HPV?
Oh, there's over 100 types of HPV, and researchers are finding more and more new strains. So we're getting smarter with the types and the kinds of HPV viruses that are out there.
So there are more than 40, for example?
Well, there's more than 100 in general. For genital cancers, there is between 30 and 40 HPV viral viruses out there.
But are some more high risk for cancer as opposed to others?
Yes. There's like 15 to 20 that are specifically found for the cervical cancer and vulvar cancer. Specifically, the HPV type 16 and 18 have been found in majority. Like HPV 16 is 54% of cervical cancers.
So they have identified which ones are really more high risk.
That are more high risk. And then the low risk are the ones who that can cause warts.
Genital
warts, as well as the warts on your fingers and the little warts that children get. HPV is linked to that. However, we need to be clear, those are not sexually transmitted for little children.
Right. Well, how do you know if you have it? I mean, you might notice you have warts. That's something pretty obvious. But other than that, I read somewhere that most of the symptoms are often silent. And in some cases, the virus seems to go away and doesn't really lead to any health problems. So how do you know?
Correct. Unfortunately for us, we don't have symptoms like vaginal discharge or an actual sore. And the only way we can really find out is through a pap smear or an actual HPV culture.
So tell us about that. What about screening to know if you have it?
Recently, ACOG, American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists, as well as the American Cancer Society and American Colposcopy Society, ASCCP, had changed the recommendations for screening for pap smears. We used to get pap smears when we were in our teens. They now say that's not important because we know 99.7% of the cancers are through HPV virus, that if we screen under the age of 21, you will not pick up the cancer. You will not pick up the abnormality because this is a slow-growing cancer. So they recommend pap smears after the age of 21, and we can stop at the age of 65.
But is the screening for the cancer or for the existence of the HPV?
It's for the abnormality changes to your cervix. So that means that when you have a pap smear coming back abnormal, we have already asked the lab to do an HPV analysis to see if it's HPV positive. So when you have your pap smear and you have a result that says it's normal, that means you do not have an active HPV infection. It also means if it comes back abnormal, that if the HPV is present, that we need to take further steps to evaluate whether you have cancer or you are heading towards cancer.
So is there any way at this point to know which people who are infected with HPV will go on to develop cancer?
No, you can't. You can't determine that by looking at a person or through someone's history. Obviously, it's important for us to be as healthy as possible and our immune system to not be compromised, and also to be a non-smoker because smoking interferes with our immune system. And HPV can be cleared from our body in most cases, except there are a small number, about 10%, who do go on to further advanced cervical abnormality that could lead to cancer.
So the point is, it's endemic. Many people have HPV in their system, but don't necessarily go on to develop the cancer.
Correct.
It's a smaller percentage
Correct.
That do.
Correct. And the only way you will know if you have HPV is to do an HPV DNA culture. That's the only way you'll know.
So let's get very clear. How is it that HPV is transmitted?
It is transmitted
through this type of HPV.
This type of HPV, we're called the high-risk HPV, is transmitted through sexual contact.
So only.
So that means you have to be exposed to HPV from someone else through sexual contact. And it could be oral, it could be anal, and it could be from sex toys as well, the sharing of sex toys.
So it also doesn't matter, therefore, if it's heterosexual or homosexual.
It's not specific to...
It's sexual engagement.
Sexual engagement, correct.
Right. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen. I'm here with Heather Shannon, and we're talking about HPV, the human papillomavirus, and its relationship to cancer. So I understand right now there is no cure for it. The only way to deal with it, in fact, is prevention, or the best way, not the only way. We'll get to treatment after. But the fact is there is no cure, so we're hoping that people pay attention to this whole notion of prevention. Tell us about prevention.
Prevention. We've got some good companies that have developed a vaccine. There's the Gardasil vaccine and the Cerevax. There's two types. And they are now recommended by the pediatricians to give to our girls that are as young as 9, as well as to boys.
And that's a recent addition to the recommendation, isn't
it? Within the last 5 years or so. So this vaccine is... proven to reduce the risks of certain types of HPV strains for development of cervical cancer. And the specific one is HPV 16, that can, as well as 18, that can cause cervical cancer, that these vaccines will help boost the immune system in our younger girls.
So they've targeted HPV 16 and 18, though the ones which you mentioned before are most likely responsible for going on to develop cancer.
Correct. Approximately 70% of the cancers, yes.
And I read somewhere there are some new ones in the pipeline. Do you know much about those?
They're always developing new vaccines. It's needed because there's multiple strains, like I said, up to 40 strains of HPV that can cause cancer. So they continue to develop the technology.
So the concept really here is to catch it before. If everyone can be exposed and it's so prevalent, that the idea is to boost your immune system prior to sexual engagement, meaning at an age where you're not yet sexually active.
Correct.
But I think that what I've been reading is that the vaccines are underutilized. Let's talk about that. Why do you think that is, or what seem to be the stumbling blocks there?
Well, we've got a society that wants to protect our children from feeling that sex is okay. And if we give this immunizations, there are some parents that feel that this is giving their child permission to have sex.
Prematurely.
Prematurely,
so to speak.
Exactly. And also not be protective of their body and have maybe unprotected sex. Even though this HPV vaccine may help protect from cervical cancers or penile cancers, it's not going to protect from your other sexually transmitted diseases.
So that's a very important point. But is there any evidence that increases sexual promiscuity?
There is not evidence. I think it's more of a emotional feeling.
Do you think also what plays a role is people's general, of late, general suspicion with regard to vaccination in general?
Well, there's a lot of concern, especially with the autism scare years ago with our immunizations. So I do think that we're more cautious as parents of what vaccines are truly necessary. And of course, I think a lot of us feel that, well, our child will not have cervical cancer or end up with anal or penile cancer.
So I understand that right now the New York State rate of vaccination is quite low. Are they doing anything to try to boost this?
I think their most primary goal is to provide the education and information to the parents, to the families, to let them know that this is an important decision that they need to make for their child's future.
Is there anything that you know of that's going on in terms of education? Because it sounds to me like education both in schools and at home, primarily at home, because I think these kinds of conversations really need to take place at home. In your experience, in your professional experience, is that kind of thing happening more and more?
I don't think there's a lot that's more and more in the schools. I had actually offered my services to provide education to middle school students regarding these type of issues, and it wasn't jumped on. They feel they have a good health program to discuss sexual health with.
And do you think they're doing a decent job of that kind of thing?
From a parent's standpoint, with my own children, I feel that it could be stronger. I think it could be better. I understand that there's the age of, if we put the power of suggestion in a child, that maybe they're going to go out and have sex in middle school, but I don't think that's, I think if...
It seems to be that's where the rub lies, though.
Yes,
I mean, we've
correct.
Got, on both sides of the argument, we say, if you talk about it too early, and it's been the big argument against sex education in general, that maybe they'll be more curious and they'll more be likely to engage. But the reality is, despite all that, whether it's media or whether it's just the world we live in, kids are engaging in sex a lot younger. So with that in mind, I'm on my soapbox here, but we need to protect them with education and knowledge and with vaccination in this case.
That's correct. And I actually have a statistic right here from the CDC that talks about sixth graders who've had sex is 8.6%. And more than three partners is greater than 4.3% of sixth graders that have initiated sex. So this is important.
That's a dramatic fact.
It is a dramatic fact. And this is from the CDC. We do need to talk about it, and there's a way we can present this information that will be accepted by these children in schools.
I don't want to run out of time. In the little bit of time we have left, does it make sense for a person above the ages of recommended ages to get a vaccine, an HPV vaccine?
Knowing that 99.7% of our cervical cancers come from HPV, we could stop cervical cancer.
In its tracks. If all women, then, are you saying, to what are the age ranges that you would say it's worthwhile?
The recommendations now is age 9 to 26 to receive the HPV vaccine.
Great. So knowledge is power. And if you want to know more about all of this whole notion of annual screenings, you can contact Heather at 315-492-5875 to set up an appointment. My guest has been Heather Shannon, the Director of Upstate Midwifery and Gynecology at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.